Pushka is a Melbourne-based modular synthesizer act and the work of multi-instrumentalist, film producer, and composer Jacob Richards. On this episode, Jacob breaks down four of Pushka's pieces and goes into the origin, headspace, and the roots and eco-anxiety of all four. We'll take you from the Southern Ocean in pursuit of Japanese whaling ships to the Tarkine rainforest of Tasmania before landing on the shores of the largest lake in Mongolia. You're listening to Artbreaker.
Hi, my name is Jacob. I'm a musician from Narm, also known as Melbourne, and I perform under the artist name Pushka, and I make ambient-ish electronic music that I perform live, mostly with a modular synthesizer.
So you said there, Jacob, that you make sort of ambient-ish music, and how did you come into making music in that space, and what was your kind of musical journey up into reaching the point you're at now with Pushka?
Yeah, I've been a musician for a long time. I started playing guitar in my early teens. I think I was 13. Got a guitar for Christmas from Dad, probably from a garage sale for next to nothing. And as far back as I can remember, I was like always interested in music. And so, yeah, like got super obsessed with that and practiced all the time through high school. Somewhere along the way, I started getting into effects pedals and things, and was doing like a lot of guitar loop stuff, a lot of improvisation through effects and things. After enjoying that for a long time, thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool to add a synth or a drum machine to this? Because I was starting to feel very limited just doing, improv guitar loops over and over again. And so bought my first synth, and that was about 8 or 9 years ago now, and thought it was super awesome. And yeah, I got obsessed with that as well and ended up building up something of a studio. Then about 2.5 years ago, my nana passed away, so my father's mother. And for the first time in my life, I was left with a small sum of money that I could use. And instead of putting that in the bank or towards property or the kind of thing that adults might do.
Subjectively.
I bought you don't just buy it outright, but I started getting into modular synths, which was something that I came across too expensive for me to get into. And so, I got this sum of money and, I felt like this was my chance to get into that. I thought it would be something that would string all the different instruments that I play kind of together. But then it kind of took me the other way where I got super obsessed with something and, I got right into modular and found that it was just like everything that I'd always wanted, like adult version of just doing guitar loops. And that's kind of mostly what I'm using now. Like I do film soundtracks sometimes where I'm using all sorts of things. But yeah, mostly now I'm just playing on modular. And I've been thinking recently, I've somehow kind of kept to doing the same kind of thing I've always done, like guitar stuff, improv loops. You know, I'm kind of still doing that, but just like it's matured a lot. I guess I call it ambient-ish because it's not traditional kind of ambient stuff. There's a lot more melody and harmony and structure to the sounds and a lot more rhythmic, and sometimes it can be quite dramatic and intense. But at the same time, like beatless electronic music. I call it ambient because I'm not really sure what else to call it. Also, at the same time, I do make some straight up more ambient stuff sometimes. This kind of idea of like creating a space or a world within a piece of music is something that I'm definitely trying to achieve.
For a non-musician like me, a synthesizer, I've got an idea in my head of what they look like, like a Moog or a Korg synth, a big box with a lot of dials and buttons on it, probably being used in Joy Division. What's a modular synth? For those of us who don't know what that looks like.
So, yeah, a modular synth, it's kind of like the way synths were made back in like the 50s and 60s before they became commercialized. Moog was the first company that made it like as like a synth in a keyboard. It was just like one instrument. But prior to that, synths were either like weird, enormous machines, or they were modular. And basically the idea of modular is that instead of having a whole synth that's there, like made to press keys and it'll, I don't know, go through a circuit and come out as a sound, a modular synth, you use patch cables, a bit kind of like telephone connections back in the day. So using patch cables to create a circuit between different modules, this new wave of modular synths. So yeah, they've always been around, but this new kind of wave started from largely a German company.
21st century.
In the 90s that they called Eurorack, which is like really compact. It uses 3.5 mil jacks instead of quarter inch jacks or the old banana style jacks that they used to use a lot. So in this way, yeah, like they were building a lot of different kinds of modules, and you could like pretty much like custom build whatever you wanted in a synthesizer. Somewhere along the way, there were other companies and manufacturers that started building things that could fit within that kind of ecosystem. And now over the last 5 years or so, it's really exploded. I don't know, thousands of different modules made by people around the world. Like most of them are like one person to a handful of people operations, like really boutique handmade kind of stuff. I just can't get enough. So the one I've put together, it's my custom built instrument that I made for performing, creating the kind of music that I'm into. And I've really designed mine around interaction and performance and being able to improvise on it. And so in that way, it's really, I don't know, unique and special instrument to anyone who gets into it.
Were you always looking to perform live and in front of people? Is that sort of one of the reasons you wanted to learn an instrument?
I think when I was first learning to play guitar, I think it's just something that I just wanted to do. I didn't even know if I wanted to perform or not back then. It was just like, I don't know, I was always compelled to want to play music. Back in high school, I was always into like drama and all those sorts of things. So I did always enjoy being in front of an audience and doing performance. And so, yeah, naturally, the more that I got better at playing like the guitar, the more I wanted to perform. As I got more and more into synth stuff, it kind of took me away from performance. Like it was originally meant to be something to kind of go with my guitar loop stuff. But then I ended up something more of a studio musician. Yeah, modular was kind of an answer to that. It was like a way that I could get something that could be like full voiced, built to my whatever I wanted in like a fairly small compact case. Did that really well. Like it exceeded my expectations in that way. Like a few years ago, I wasn't really performing at all. I wasn't doing any serious band stuff at the time. Then yeah, I got into modular, and finally I felt like I was able to take this instrument outside the studio instead of trying to lug a bunch of keyboards that, I don't know, I was never great at playing keyboard anyway. And it just really worked for me. It's just something that feels portable and feels very personal in a certain kind of way.
In the world of modular synth, are you a great modular synth player? Like, who are the greats? Is there like a roster to compare yourself against?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because like, I don't know, you're custom building something, and like there's so many different ways that you can approach it. Yeah, there's this idea of like, what is it to be a good modular synthesis? For me, it's very much about performance. But for other people, it might just be about, I don't know, sound design or using it as part of a studio tool and those kinds of things. But yeah, like there definitely are some artists that stand out as really great modular synthesis. There's a lot of women that stand out, actually, which is great. Electronic music, obviously there's a lot of like bro culture around a lot of that stuff. Even back in the early days, Wendy Carlos, who did the Clockwork Orange soundtrack. She did all that on a Moog synth, and I think she was like super important in bringing that electronic sound to a more mainstream audience for the first time. Like she did the Switched On Bach albums back in the 70s, which was just, yeah, like Bach music made on a Moog modular synth.
The development of modern electronics made it possible to recreate music from its component parts, its tones.
What are you looking at, though? One of the very first 8-track machines. We used it for switched-on Bachwell tempered synthesizer right through a good half of Clockwork Orange.
Wendy Carlos, in her studio in Greenwich Village, is one of the pioneers of synthesized sound. Her controversial versions of the classics, created entirely electronically, put machine-made music on the map.
Right now we're listening to the 8-track, and we're mixing, sort of playing the role of the conductor, putting together, in this case, a pair of tracks which has all of the string section that sounds like this. There's a harpsichord track, and two flutes, and there's this nice solo that's split up into two tracks. Let's put them all together. I think it needs a little more echo. Yeah, that's good.
And then, yeah, also people like Suzanne Chani, who was one of the first people to get into the Buchla, which is another old modular synth, kind of the West Coast counterpart to the East Coast Moog. Buchla was on the West Coast, so it was kind of different.
Oh, there was an East Coast, West Coast beef in the synth community.
I wouldn't say it's a beef, but
or rivalry.
Yeah, like there's definitely like a really different kind of approach to synthesis there. The Moog was what they call subtractive synthesis, which is all about like getting a sound and then like narrowing that sound down and like going through filters and things and using a keyboard to play it and then, yeah, like coming out with tones in that kind of way. Whereas the West Coast stuff was all about what they call additive synthesis, which is different sounds and adding them together to make more complex kind of sounds. So pretty interesting.
That's so cool. To spin off from talking about music, it's kind of weird that we are doing a music show on a podcast network all about the climate crisis and about the climate community, but we especially love talking to musicians about how their musical journey has kind of paralleled their climate journey, how they became aware of climate change, and how it's kind of affected their life along with the music they're making or the music they're listening to, and how the interplay has sort of been there between the two spaces. So before we get into specifically some of your pieces, I'm curious about your kind of journey into climate change awareness or environmental awareness. I understand you're kind of from birth, you had quite a close connection to the natural world.
Yeah, definitely. I was born in the countryside and I lived in the countryside through my entire youth up until I moved out of home when I was 18. Parents were both, always very connected to natural world. My dad's always like being very like outspoken, like political and environmental. And even when I was a kid, I had exposure to environmental movements back in the 90s. Like we went out to Southeast Gippsland and I got to meet people that were part of the environmental movement that were trying to protect the rainforest from being logged out that way back then. I have these great childhood memories of like being really adventurous with my older brother. Like we had this creek behind our house that we used to go out and get completely soaking wet in the middle of winter in. And I think that, I've always had this appreciation for the environment alongside like learning about how it's been under threat for quite a long time now from my dad and his hippie mates, I guess.
So the interplay between your music and your care and concern about the climate, if I was just to listen to your music, do you think it would be very obvious that you're an environmentally concerned person?
That's a hard one. Like, I want to make my music about these things that I care about. But yeah, the music I make it's like instrumental music. And so like trying to convey that through my music is definitely something of a challenge. Yeah, I'm not sure if it would be super obvious Like, how do I connect to people that I care about this stuff through my music?
Well, I think it'll be a safe bet that once we start talking about the specific pieces and your frame of mind when you were composing them, that influence will be very much not only on the sleeve, but you'll start to hear it in the music itself. There is this kind of growing genre of music that is trying to evoke the climate crisis, and I think it's probably no less successful at that than your music is once you've heard the story. I don't think instrumental music by itself can, you know, make you think about a growing tree or a mass extinction. I might be wrong. Maybe I'm just being skeptical. But I think the power of the story in conjunction with the music to, of course, make you feel it and to reinforce that story much deeper than you otherwise would. Starting with the oldest piece of these three, Jacob, can you tell us about Epithet and where that came from?
So Epithet, it was the opening track from my album that I released last year called Undulations. This was the piece that I performed when I did my first module performance. I wrote and performed this piece. This was something where I felt like, after learning the instrument, I'd finally got to a point where the music I was making was something that I felt like I was achieving my creative goals. Yeah, this was a year after I got back from being in Antarctica with Sea Shepherd. So I did one of their campaigns in the Southern Ocean against the Japanese whaling fleet. Made me feel like a tiny speck in the ocean. And yeah, of course, seeing whales every day and hundreds of thousands of icebergs and life at sea and seeing the continent of Antarctica itself. Like, these are things that were so incredible and will definitely stay with me for life. Even when I was out there, I was feeling so incredibly inspired and came up with all these ideas of music that I wanted to create that to somehow, yeah, portray what it was that I experienced and felt out there. After getting into modular and like kind of having like this idea of like wanting to portray what that felt like through music, Epithet got there. When I was like writing and recording it, I was also like watching some videos that I shot out at sea while trying to make it. I ended up using a lot of those in a music video that I made, and I use a lot of those images when I perform as well, which was something I dreamt up while being out at sea, and I had this kind of mission of like...
Sounds like you've been totally ruined for future muses by that experience. What other muse could hope to compete with that?
Yeah, well, I don't know, it stuck with me, and like I still use those projections when I perform from time to time. Like, it's, I felt like that was the foundation. Like, I kind of invented the sound that and style that I had in my head this whole time along. One of the performances I did when I was in Mongolia, as part of an arts and eco tour in July. We did this concert in Ulaanbaatar, the capital. And yeah, we had some of my projections playing while we did this kind of... It was an odd kind of performance, really. It kind of felt like a variety show. Like, we were playing with all these other Mongolian artists and we had, like, I don't know, like 10 musicians from other parts of the world, and we had to try and fit all of us into 1 hour when most of us are kind of durational artists that do like performances that span 3+ hours, and we had to do this thing. But yeah, like some of the people were saying that in my little 10-minute slot of that hour, yeah, my music really fit those those visuals of the Southern Ocean. So yeah, it's really interesting how that's stuck with me so much.
What an amazing indication of the ability of music to move someone and to conjure imagery that's so far from your current surroundings. If you were able to evoke in people the Southern Ocean while in Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia, that's amazing. I'm not sure what else to say.
Thanks. Yeah, I don't know what to add either. I feel humbled. Thank you. A good story, that one. I think anything to do with that Sea Shepherd campaign is always interesting. Like, yeah, what a wild thing to be a part of.
So you got back to land after this amazing experience in the Southern Ocean, and then you took another trip, and this time you went south, but not as south as the Southern Ocean, and you spent some time in the rainforest of Tasmania. Had this piece that you made in the wake of that. Can you tell us a bit about not only the experience in the rainforests, but how that affected this piece, Automatica?
This was a piece that I recorded last year. I went to Tasmania to go to Dark Mofo Festival with my partner, which was a festival I wanted to go for a long time, but it was also an excuse to finally go to Tasmania. It was the first time I'd been there. I'd been dreaming of going for a long time, just had all these dreams of how lush and beautiful the rainforests would be down there, which turned out to be exceeding my expectations, really. Like, if you haven't been to Tasmania and you have the chance to, I highly recommend it. It's just like such an incredibly beautiful part of the world. After Dark Mofo Festival, which had its own set of inspiration, partner and I hired a car and spent a week out towards the west coast of Tasmania and the rainforest out there. I don't know, maybe lost to words of how to explain what it felt like to be in that part of the world. One rainforest we went to, like, we were there in the middle of winter, so like there was no one there. And we hired this canoe and went down this river and no one there at all. And it happened to be like a really nice weather day, so we're just like rowing down and just like, yeah, just like this really primordial sort of space, and came across this this waterfall that they named Lover's Fall or something like that. Just like how lush it was there, and just like the biodiversity of the area. Like, you could stare at the minutest part of the ground and like see all the different fungus that were growing there and the moss and everything. Just like, it was just every millimeter of that place was just like brimming full of life. After coming back from that, I wanted to create a piece of music that, I don't know, felt like being in a rainforest in some way. And yeah, so I recorded this piece, Automatica, which is a made-up word. I don't know what it means. Inspired by that incredibly beautiful part of the world down there in Tasmania, but also something of a lament of the indigenous custodians that once nurtured and lived harmoniously with that land. Like, if you read anything about indigenous history in Tasmania, well, let alone anywhere, mostly in the world really, but in Tasmania, like, just breaks your heart. They were just like incredibly, like, it seems like they were really peaceful people, and they had such a love and respect for the land. Tasmania is one of the parts of Australia that the indigenous communities got hit the hardest. There's really not a lot left of those cultures down there. While I was down there, I was thinking about this in the back of my mind all the time, like this place that felt so incredibly special is somewhere that, yeah, like the people that had always looked after that land and loved it, pretty much nowhere to be seen at all. Yeah, I think this piece has something of a kind of like a kind of haunting sort of feel. Which is, I don't know, I think even more kind of pertinent, because to think that places like the Tarkin rainforests have since been cut down and diminished in bushfires. And so I wanted to create a track that felt like those experiences there, but yeah, it also has this kind of haunting, nostalgic undertone. Yeah.
So Jacob, talking about these first two pieces, I noted that they're both coming from a place of the inspiration was in being in a solitary space. I mean, communing with nature, surrounded by beauty, but being alone as a human out in the Southern Ocean, yes, with other people on a ship, but extremely isolated, or in the Tarkine, in the Tasmanian rainforest in winter, again, away from people. You make music to perform, and you must enjoy kind of the effect your music has on people. So with the difficulty of maybe squaring those muses within these pieces you made about the experience with Sea Shepherd and the experience of Tasmania, let's talk about a piece of music you made for performance and for a festival. It's kind of the polar opposite experience of these first two. You have performed it at Rainbow Serpent. Did you compose it specifically for the festival?
I performed in a space at Rainbow Serpent, which is an autonomous temporal zone, they call it, called the Liminal Caravan. Which is run by some really interesting people. This was the same crew that I played with in Mongolia, really long duration performances, like a lot of really amazing transcendental stuff, like some incredible artists that run that space and people who perform in there. Yeah, so I wanted to make something that I felt like was me, but that, I don't know, I could, yeah, share with being a part of that with those people. I wrote a number of different sequences, and I did three performances at that festival, which were all, yeah, pretty long, and I was really blown away with how people responded to it. People were, really getting into what I was doing, and yeah, by the third night, I did this epic three-hour-long performance, and at this point, I'd been, spending the last few days with these other artists and, like, really vibing off what they were doing and vice versa. And so for this like 3-hour performance, playing with this incredible violinist who does all this processing of his violin through guitar pedals and things, as well as this vocalist that does completely out of this world kind of stuff. So I did this amazing 3-hour performance with them, and some people in the crew put on like these masks and did some like improvised dance performancey kind of stuff along with it. And such a vibe. I feel like that was the best performance I've probably ever done in my life. It's not dance music, but people were dancing around and like really getting into it, and yeah, it was just like a really kind of cathartic and connected experience that I had through my music. when I got home, before unplugging everything, I made sure that I did like a good recording of it, choosing the best parts. And yeah, that was what's turned into this track, Hyperkinesis, which I think, yeah, like really captures quite well this kind of cathartic energy that I really try to bring out in my performances. And I think also kind of, yeah, like captures that kind of sound of my performances better than most of my other pieces.
Coming to the end of 2019 as we record this, and climate strike is the word of the year, as named by the Collins Dictionary. How is your own feelings about the climate crisis, the eco-anxiety and dread? Has the act of making music helped with those feelings?
Yeah, I think in some ways it may have. I think really it's kind of nailed home the idea of just being a musician for my own ego. Like, that's such a privileged thing. It just seems like totally ridiculous when we're facing like total climate catastrophe. And so I think, yeah, like especially after being a part of this eco arts tour in Mongolia, yeah, I think that more than ever, I like want to somehow use my music, hopefully as a way of like inspiring people into, I don't know, caring about these things and some way or another. Eco-anxiety over the last year has, yeah, grown on a lot stronger. Like, I've felt this kind of sense of dread about the environment being destroyed. But now it's like getting to the point where like shit's really getting real and we're not doing enough about it, like especially in a country like Australia where like our leaders are like probably owned by mining companies. I think I am finding myself like drawn to more ambient kind of music that it's still kind of nostalgic yearning for the primordial, like the kind of untouched nature, something that's kind of like grounding and immediate. And like along with that, I'm listening to a lot of drone music and things these days, which I don't know, it helps me feel calm, feel compelled to try and, yeah, make something like that is a bit more of part of my practices.
This eco tour you did of musicians through Mongolia, it sounds amazing.
It was called the Mother Ocean Eco Arts Tour, and it was an environmental campaign that was put together by this Kiwi guy who spent quite a bit of time in Australia. He was working for the Greens Party, and his background is as an environmentalist and a water scientist. And he spent some time in Mongolia earlier in the year, and he connected with some Mongolian politicians and environmentalists and, working with the secretary to kind of their equivalent to the Greens Party over there, put together this eco arts tour. Aim for it was specifically around Lake Kupskul, which is this amazing, incredible body of water that is up towards the northern parts of Mongolia. It's like meant to be one of the world's oldest and most ancient lakes, and it's meant to have the cleanest drinking water in the world. It's connected to Lake Baikal in Russia, which already has heritage listing. Lake Kupskul is super important to Mongolian people because that's a country where there's really not much water at all, and like lakes that are there are often like dry out a lot or they're very salty. This lake is, yeah, it's gigantic, and it's like has like this incredible clean water, and so the people there, they call it Mother Ocean, and it's really important to the way a lot of people survive there in a country where, yeah, like water is really scarce, and it's a country where they don't even have running water. Like logistically, you know, a developing country like that that gets so cold in winter, getting the infrastructure in they haven't got it for most of the country. There's a lot of indigenous groups that also live around the lake that rely on it for survival. Yeah, this lake, like many incredible things in the world, is under threat from mining companies and pollution. The whole point of this campaign was to raise awareness not only inside Mongolia itself, but to try and bring that to the rest of the world, as well as start this process of a UNESCO World Heritage listing. The application process for that can take up to 5 years. So there's a good chance that we'll be going back there next year. Hopefully I'll get invited to play again. I would love it. Yeah, you can check out the Mother Ocean Eco Arts Tour page. I think if you type something like that into Google or Facebook, you should be able to come up with it and stay up to date. I'm definitely trying to push for them to do more media stuff and more regular updates and things, and make it something that is ongoing throughout the year and not just during the tour itself. So while it's kind of sitting a bit dormant, hopefully it won't be sitting like that for too long.
Find a link to that in our show notes. Jacob, thank you so much for your generosity in coming on and sharing so much of your music with us and your story, the story behind these amazing pieces.
No problem.
How would you best like listeners to find and follow you?
Those who Facebook can find me as Pushka, spelled P-U-S-C-H-A .music.film. I think on Instagram, it's Pushka_music_film. You want to keep up with my latest tunes, I have a SoundCloud, just soundcloud.com/pushka. Yeah, I think those are the best kind of ways. But yeah, just if you follow any one of those, you'll see, my new music as it comes out. But you can also find my music on all the standard platforms as well.
Thank you. And yeah, you can find links to all of that in the show notes as well, listeners. So make it nice and easy to follow Jacob's work. Jacob, thank you again. You've been, just such a legend. You were very generous with what you shared with us, and thank you.
No problem at all. It's been my pleasure to be a part of it, and yeah, I really like what you guys are doing. I think this is such an important ongoing conversation that we should all be having about this world that we live in. So keep up the good work.